Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio. Excuse me. The place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Monday, November 25th, 2013. My name is Sally Baptist. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Tonight we have a special guest. We have our first candidate for the 2014 season coming up, Eric Arroyo. I'm terrible at names. He's going to correct me. I apologize to everybody. I can barely say my own name, but that's another story. Anyway, he's running for the Florida House, District 47, and we're going to get into an in-depth discussion with Eric, why he's running for office, and go into some of the specifics, what his platform is, what he believes in. And you're free to call in and ask questions. You can also post your questions in the chat room, and I'll read those off as well. But before we go there, excuse me, not sure what is hanging in my throat there, but okay, this crazy weather, I guess. But anyway, before we go there, I want to talk about, we've been trying to make people appreciate what communism really means. There's this notion that America could never be communist, and just because that's not what it's supposed to be, and yet little by little, rights are being taken away from us, and we have to accept the fact. Excuse me, hold on a second. Excuse me, let's hope that took care of that. So we have to accept the fact that things are changing, and the question I put out there for everybody is America the land of the free or the land of the communist, the new land of communism? And, you know, some people say, oh, come on, let's not get carried away with it, the conspiracy loon routine. But look at it. Look at everything that has happened. Just take a look at how your rights have been eroded. We can talk about the Patriot Act, we can talk about the NSA, we can talk about those massive things taking away our freedom of speech, our right, everything they're trying to do with gun control, et cetera, et cetera. All these things they're trying to do, and of course, the biggie, health care, socialized medicine, we're not even allowed to decide what doctor we go to. Excuse me. But there's a couple of things that are going on right now that I find are very telling of this. And if you think it's an exaggeration to think about communism in America, then you're not paying close attention to what's going on, or you don't know what communism is. But there's a 15-year-old girl, she's in the Boston hospital. Literally, they're taking away the rights of the parents on how to treat their daughter. And they're not doing any, it's not like they're beating her or doing something crazy like that. They're trying to get the right kind of help for her. Massachusetts, the state has decided that they know better. And the fact is, and this has been said on MSNBC, literally has been said, that we're used to thinking that the child is part of the family and that the parents are, you know, take care of the child and it's their child. And that's what we're used to thinking, but that's not what it is. The child is the property. Property is the word they use. Property of the community. If that's not communism, what is it? The state taking ownership of the child. The child is no longer part of the family. Think, just again, if you're not thinking that, if you think we can't become communist, you're not paying attention to what is happening right now. The state taking away a 15-year-old daughter from the parents who were trying to get her the right type of care for her health condition, whatever it may be. I don't know. I don't remember the specifics. But this is Boston Hospital doing this. Then, right here in Florida, in Tallahassee, they're taking away the rights for a family to grow vegetables in their yard. We're not talking about having some kind of safety or health hazard to the community where they're trying to do something to protect the community. We're talking about people growing food to eat. What if there's something sick in America when you are not allowed to grow food to eat on your own land? This is how bad it's gotten. And, when you lose the right to own property, what do you think that is? Communism. What is communism? Common property. Common core education. Communism. The right where the individual has no rights. You are part of the, you are not an individual. You are part of the community. You are a number in the community. You are not an individual. You have no individual rights. You have no right to own a home. No right to own a personal car. Property in common. That is communism. I mean, and some people think I'm trying to be sarcastic. Maybe I am a little, I don't know. But I get so tired of Americans who don't seem to understand what communism is, and they've got these blinders on to think it can't happen here. Well, 9/11 couldn't happen here either, right? But it did. So Americans need to wake up and understand what is truly happening to this country today. You have no rights. And there was another thing, I believe, I don't want to say Washington State, but I'm not really sure. I might have the location wrong. Where an individual is fishing for something to eat, literally fishing to have a fish to eat, and they're being told they can't do that either. They have to have a license. Sick. It's one thing if you're out there fishing to sell to the brink of the market and bringing all sorts of a large catch kind of thing, and you are profiteering from it, and you're providing food to others. But when you're strictly trying to sustain yourself, there's something sick when, as an American, you do not have the right to catch food and to grow food for your own existence, sustainability. There's just something terribly wrong here. And then, in the meantime, with all that, with everything that's going on, Iran, I'm not going to even get into that tonight. I don't know what these people in Washington, D.C. are doing. I know they're clueless, and I also do know there's many antis in Washington, D.C., such as a president who supports the Muslim Brotherhood over Americans. But speaking of our president, with all these things going on, all the problems with health care, then this deal in Iran, which not too many of our allies are happy about. It sounds to be a joke, but again, I'm not going to get into that. Where is he? What is the number one job of the President of the United States? Fundraising. He's doing his grand tour across the countryside, fundraising, because that's what his job is. His job isn't to run this country. His job isn't to deal with his disastrous health care. He's out there fundraising. You know, it's like, isn't this sick? We elected a fundraiser. We didn't elect a president. We elected a fundraiser. And I'm really hoping that the funds are drying up somehow out there because of everything he has done. But this one fundraiser he went to, $16,000 a plate. And this, the part that is so ironic about that, too, like, okay, $16,000 a plate to see the president, to be in the same room or whatever. And this is the Democrat Party that claims to be so against big business. The Democrat Party that thinks the Democrat Party cares for the working class and the middle class and is protecting them. Yet who do they go to? Big business. The hypocrisy of all and the sadness or the ignorance of too many Americans is so embarrassing and disgraceful to me. It really is. But this is we didn't hire a president to lead this country. We hired somebody to go out and do campaign, play golf, and go raise funds, campaign fundraising. That's what he does. That's his job. Forget all the rest of it. Forget about health care. I mean, he's got health care. He doesn't care. He's got the best health care. He can have any doctor he wants, and we'll pay for it, taxpayers. So does Congress. It's just nuts. But the same thing, what you see happening in D.C., is happening at the state level, and that's what we're going to get into with Eric here in just a minute, because just to say that all government is local and all that is so true. Right here in Orange County, which Eric is running for. He's running against my current House Representative, Linda Stewart. I won't say her name too many times. Right here, we have between the city of Orlando and Orange County, one of them is a Democrat, one of them is a Republican / Rhino. They're spending our money. They insisted on spending billions of dollars on venues. They refused to put it on the ballot because they knew the people would vote it down. What does that tell you when those who want to spend massive tax dollars, they don't want to put it on a referendum because they know the people will say no. But they're the elected politicians, and they must know better because the rest of us are just too stupid, right? We don't know what we should do with our money. So they've gone out there and they created all these venues, the Yard Center downtown, the renovation of the Orange Bowl, the some other stupid thing. They have some other venue, and, of course, they have scam rail out there, transportation. All these things that they're funding that the people would have never voted for, and now they don't have the money for it. So what are they going to do? And this is true Buddy Dyer and, of course, Rhino Teresa Jacobs going along with it. Now we need to bring Major League Soccer to Orlando. I mean, we can't even fill up the stink of the stadium for the Orlando Magic, but we need to have soccer here in Orlando, in Orange County. So now they've just signed some other bill off, whatever, several million dollars for a soccer stadium when they can't sell soccer in Miami or Tampa or Jacksonville, places that are much bigger on sports than what Orlando is, and places that don't have Disney and everything else. They just signed on to that, and part of the money they did there is going to finish up the Art Center because they ran out of money there. This is what the morons are doing locally. It's no different. And then we'll get into what's going on in Tallahassee. Rick Scott, I will not vote for him. Pam Bondi, I will not vote for her. I don't care what party they're in. As I explained to Eric, I am a no-party affiliate. I am totally sick of both of the parties, political parties in general. And I'm looking for somebody who actually believes in something. And when they take that oath, they actually take it seriously. Because right now, I don't see anybody honoring their oath of office. I really don't. To me, it's just a scam. So, excuse me. So I'm really looking forward to Eric giving me all the reasons why I should vote for him. Because I will have that opportunity. I'm definitely not going to vote for Linda Stewart. You can be sure of that part. I didn't vote for her last time. And as I have told everybody, as of this moment in time, across the board, for everybody that I voted for, there's only one person that's in office that I voted for. That's Pam Bondi. And I really thought Pam was going to be different, too. I thought she stood for something. But now she's anti-gun control. Or I should say she's anti-guns. She's out there promoting gun control. This is Pam Bondi. So she's not getting my vote again. I'm glad she's trying to do something about that spy stuff they're selling in the convenience stores that's killing some of these kids. She ought to do something. But Pam Bondi, I sent her letters. No response. She doesn't even go tell me to jump in a lake. She doesn't, and I will never vote for her again either. And I really hope the Florida Republican Party of Florida, as it's known, will take a second look at who they're promoting and who they're supporting. If these people do not honor the oath of office, like Rick Scott, do not to believe in any kind of conservative values, the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of Florida, you know, what a concept. And they keep promoting them, the Republican Party is going to die. And I'm not going to support it. I refuse to hold my nose and vote for those I just don't think earn my vote. And we need more Americans to do that. And because of the Tea Party, that's happening a lot more these days. On that note, I will stop my rant. Everybody that knows me knows I have to rant for a few minutes, and we will go to Eric. And Eric, I will let you say your name correctly and introduce yourself and tell us who you are and why you're running for office. Welcome, Eric.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sally. My name is Eric Arroyo, it's pronounced, and I'm running for the Florida House of Representatives in District 47 in Orange County. The seat is currently held by Linda Stewart, and we're trying to help her, you know, retire from it next year. I was born in the Dominican Republic, so in terms of somebody who went through the system and actually became a legal immigrant to the United States, that's me. I'm a first-generation American, first-generation high school grad, first-generation college grad, and first-generation law school student. And if anybody ever questions whether the American dream is possible, you just have to send them my way because it truly is. This is the land of opportunity, and that's what I'm here to promote. But as of late, I feel like the government is not going in the proper directions. Our elected officials are not acting in the interest of the people, but instead in their own selfish interest or the interest of special parties. I've taken over the course of the last 6 years, I've taken over 10 courses at the University of Florida and at Florida A&M University's College of Law. I've studied the federal and state constitutions, over 10 courses in those. I understand how government and policy work. Most of these politicians, you see, they don't do that. It's not as simple as saying a blanket statement. You know, there's at least two arguments to every position, and when someone starts to think logically and analyze a problem, that's when you come to a viable solution. So we need to end this whole sports team politics mentality that we have. where we say, you know, we're not going to talk to the other side. We're not going to listen to what they're saying because nothing gets done. That's when you start arguing and nothing gets done because they refuse to compromise simply because they're holding a grudge. And I feel that like I'm a Republican. I understand you're an independent, but we keep dividing ourselves more and more. The Republican Party. See, we have people who are disgruntled with the Republican Party who become part of the Tea Party and part of the Libertarians, or they even become independent, like yourself. And it's important to recognize and listen to everyone's perspective. We don't want to keep dividing the party on issues. Because if you continue doing that, you end up with a single-party system. One of the party dies. And you know what a single-party system leads to? It's communism. So that's why I'm running. I'm running to bring logical thinking back to the legislature and to make the people be represented in the legislature instead of special interests.
Well, let me ask you one quick question. And this was actually something at the federal level, but it applies at both levels. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Enumerated Powers Act. It's actually the very first time it was put into Congress, submitted to the Senate and to the House. The Enumerated Powers Act, I think it was like 1998. And every year somebody puts it out there. And this year it was Rand Paul and Tom Coburn from Oklahoma. Some of those two senators did the actual presentation of it and put it out there. The Republicans voted for it. The Democrats voted against it. For those who aren't familiar with the Enumerated Powers Act, all it is, the Enumerated Powers Act says, before we pass a new bill, a new law, we're going to compare it. We're going to go look at the Constitution and determine, is it constitutional to do this? We're going to go challenge it against what the Constitution says, and are we supposed to be doing this? The Enumerated Powers Act. What are the enumerated powers? And I find it just totally outrageous that you would have, and in this case it's the Democrats, who won't vote for it. They do not want to be held accountable to that Constitution. I want to know, do you have if there was an Enumerated Powers Act in Tallahassee, Florida, would you have a problem voting for it? And don't you think, before the state or the Fed, whoever, goes out there and passes new laws, they ought to actually look and see if they're constitutional?
Yeah, I completely agree. I would definitely vote for it. You see, people forget that we're a nation governed by laws, not people. That's the difference between a republic and a democracy. And we're a representative democracy, republic. And what you have to understand is that we have the Bill of Rights. Those are our laws. And you can't just go making decisions based on public opinion. So I would definitely vote for that act. If we did have an Enumerated Powers Act enacted, then things like Obamacare would not get passed because the 10th Amendment reserved that to the states.
Exactly. So you are governed by the Constitution, both the federal and state Constitution at the Florida House level. That is what I'd like to hear. That's why we have them out there. So we'll get into some more of the details. Now, I was looking at your website, and I'm just going to kind of go down on some of your key points, and then I threw a couple in that were mine that I wanted to go ahead and talk about, too. But the first one is supporting small business. So if you want to go ahead and give us your overview on what we need to do to promote small business, why it's important.
Because as you were mentioning, some public-private partnerships, what they're doing is they're creating an atmosphere that's great for big business. You know, we are either going towards the government, granting the government power, or granting corporations more power than they should. And if tax dollars are going towards a private corporations and they're getting all the profits, that's not right. You see, 2 out of 3 new jobs created in the United States come from small businesses. We should invest in our small business because they're the life of America. So if we want to create jobs, if we want a vibrant economy, we have to invest in small businesses. There's just no doubt about it. Not bringing
and
in,
I,
you know, sorry?
Go ahead.
you know, now bringing in multi-million-dollar, billion-dollar corporations that will come and just completely create a monopoly in whatever city they dominate.
Exactly. And you think about what America started out being. It was all about the individual, which is the same thing in small business. It was about the individual, the small shop owner. You know, you did what you did. You grew your own food if you wanted to or had to. And then you did various tasks within the community, within your town, and these kind of things. You traded your services that way. It was all very small business, and that's what we were. Then we got these major corporations, Walmart. Walmart, for those who don't know, just beware. You know, Sam Walton, I'm sure, is spinning in his grave these days. But Walmart is out there actively promoting amnesty. And the only reason they would do that is because they want to undermine their own employees, which are typically of the lower income. Mostly, you know, you could be high up in the food chain at Walmart to make any decent money. But literally, this is what's happened with this mentality. And you think about, okay, it's this big Walmart takes over everything, and you got to work for the master of Walmart instead of having the small shops. It's I think it's all very relevant to what has happened and why it's destroying small business. It's very hard to be a small business when you have these large mega businesses that can underprice everything you do. And myself, while I can't totally depend on small shops anymore because a lot of them aren't there anymore, I do what I can to go to small shops, individual privately owned restaurants, not the chains. I do eat the chains at chains too, but because, again, you can't always stop it. But I try to promote the smaller business as much as I can because that's what we need to do to get back to that. So any other thing on the small business? And let me see. I keep going to flip back and forth in that chat room. If we have any questions out there, and people are free to post questions in the chat room. If you have anything else on that, or were we ready to go to my favorite topic of transportation?
Transportation. Okay. We can go on to transportation.
Okay. I'm just going down my list here that I have on the show page. As anybody who knows me knows, I first got involved because of transportation. I got involved a few years back when they first wanted to put tolls on I-4. Excuse me. And we were able to stop it. It was Mobility 2020 is what they called it. They were doing two things, or two or three things in this one bill. They were going to increase the sales tax, and this is Orange County. Crooked Carty was the mayor, Orange County mayor. He used to be called the commission chairman, but then Carty had an identity crisis and wanted to be called a mayor. So they were going to increase the sales tax, take part of the sales tax to build the toll roads on I-4, and then also the tolls on I-4 are going to be used to fund, they call it SunRail, I call it ScamRail. I mean, just massive, massive corruption of transportation. And now they're coming up with a vehicle miles traveled tax, everything you can think of ways to rip us off while they rob the highway trust fund over and over again. I totally despise the toll roads, the expressway authority. I've almost been arrested there. it's nothing but a culture of corruption, and that's what the grand jury said. Scott Batterson, one of the guys on there, literally voted for a project where he had a financial interest in. There is so much corruption in transportation, it's not funny. And we did not need toll roads. Toll roads, the nonsense of toll roads is that it's a user fee. That's the biggest farce there is, not to mention they're privatizing and selling these toll roads in many cases to foreign entities. You know, talk about America being for sale, what they're doing with the toll roads. What do you see as the solution for transportation? And I stress, when I talk transportation and toll taxes and this stuff, anything that makes transportation more expensive makes everybody's cost of living go up. It doesn't matter whether it's grandma or whoever. Our lifeline, our economy, is linked to the highway system. The cost of living is linked to that highway system. National defense, the interstate highway system, is part of national defense. It's also part of emergency services. So, and evacuations, law enforcement, et cetera, et cetera. So transportation is not something that is truly just something you elect to use at a whim. It's kind of thing. So what are your thoughts on transportation? What would you do about Florida's transportation? Because everybody complains about gridlock.
See, there's it's all it's all interconnected. The state of Florida gets its revenue from four different sources. Gets it from taxes, it gets it from fees, it gets it from special assessments, which are like local taxes, like ad valorem taxes, and it gets it from bonds. When you lower taxes or there's a deficit in the revenue, when government spends too much money, they have to raise fees. However, a lot of the times you have a lot of these people that are in these organizations that are in charge of raising fees or lowering fees, they overspend, or they act in their own interest. They're getting something out of, you know, giving someone a specific contract, and that results in your fees being increased. That's 50 cents. You know, let's say you go through two toll roads a day. And that's a 50 cent increase. That's $1 to go and $1 to come back. That's $2 a day just in the increase. And if you do that five times a week for a whole year, it adds up a lot, just that small, simple increase. I think the solution would be to increase government transparency and accountability. See, we don't know where our money's going. We don't know why our fees are being raised. We don't know who the contracts are being given out to. And a lot of the times these contracts are given out to because there's a connection there, because, you know, someone in let's say, the Expressway Authority knows someone that is going to take the contract. So there's like a little deal that's going on that nobody knows about because there's no transparency. So if we can't, I mean, there's just so much drama and conflict that's been caused lately with the Orange County Expressway Authority. The Orlando Sentinel is writing about it pretty much like every month. And something definitely needs to be done, and I think it has to do with more accountability and more transparency.
Well, maybe, I'll tell you one thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Maybe even create a way for people to, you know, to be able to combat an increase. You know, maybe ask for an explanation, or maybe even override that vote by petitioning the Orange County commissioners, or even by referendum.
Well, there's a couple of things there. First off, a couple of years back, I started drafting the Florida Freeway Act, which is hopefully, yeah, maybe if you get in there and you're interested in doing something about transportation, I would be more than happy to finish working on this as a proposal. You could obviously make your own changes to it as you see fit. But totally opposite of what has just happened, and I'm going to talk about that needs to be reversed, but it should have been the other way around. It should be that prior to, for any public works project, any road that's going to be built as a toll road, it should be forced to be put on a public referendum. If you're going to be this is taxation without representation, big time, because tolls are taxes. Toll is a four-letter word for tax. And so that is the one piece. And what has recently happened is this is what's done up there in Tallahassee, and it needs to be overturned big time, or a lot of exceptions made to it. They're saying any new expressway they build in the state of Florida is going to be a toll road. They're converting the interstates to toll roads. They're doing this all over the place. And like you said, they've already got umpteen taxes. They have the on the gas tax, you've got the local, county, or excuse me, the county, state, and federal gas tax that's already there. And then you've got local property taxes. You've got local sales taxes. You've got registration fees. All these, you have taxes all over the place when you buy and operate a motor vehicle on a car on the road. There's multiple sources of taxes, and there's definitely better ways to, if you truly need the money, which I'm not sure you do because of the way they waste money and all the land deals and everything else they do, insider trading is what I call it, if you needed to raise more revenues, you know, to go and say $5 more at the registration fee, at the registration once a year, $5, but it would have to go towards the highways, not all the other garbage. I don't know that you need that, but I'm saying as an option, you know, $5 once a year for everybody that's driving on these roads would be a lot different than trying to hit up the working class, a family, hitting them up for, as you said, let's see, they work 20, well, we'll say 20 days a week that they go back and forth to work. It's probably a few more averaging across a month at 20, and that's $2 a day. So you got $40 right there. $40 a month that they're not spending in the local economy, And it's and then when you talk about whether you have two people who drive to work or you go and drive someplace on the weekend, myself, I refuse to drive on the toll roads. I know how to get around Florida without driving on toll roads, and I do it. Some people think it's kind of funny, and they get some jokes about it, but I said I'm not going to promote and support corruption. I will not drive in the Lexus lanes of I-4. And those Lexus lanes right now, I don't know that they've ever gotten a partnership. This is one of these public-private partnerships, which are totally unconstitutional in the state of Florida. Again, they go out there and they, behind our backs, play with the state constitution. But it's at the very most basic ethical belief, it is not right for government to go into business with an organization for profit. It's one thing to issue bonds and some things like that, and they do have some limited ways to do those things, but to go and jointly enter into an agreement with the private sector to charge a toll tax for profit is unconstitutional. It's the total collusion of government and the private sector. And what happens when you have the collusion of government and the private sector? Can we say that word again? Communism? What do people think is happening when you have this kind of collusion going on? And when it comes to transportation, it's happened all over the place here. I was born and raised here in Orange County. I can't tell you how many land deals where the landowner, because they're all in cahoots at the county and at the city and the county levels and some of the state, they go out there, the investor goes out there and buys this land and then go rallies to get this Wakaiva Parkway and these other whatever developments of these roads out there. Then they sell the land back to the state or to the county for megabucks. It's insider trading. So many deals going on. There's so much corruption. There is nobody truly managing transportation. It's all about how much money they can make, and we haven't even talked about mass transit. So that's a whole other piece of this. But the thing is, the other thing, and again, like I said, transportation is my pet peeve. That's how I got into all this stuff. In the state of Florida, you know, the joke about how many morons does it take to screw on a light bulb and how many monkeys does it take and whatever, different jokes about how many monkeys or morons does it take to screw on a light bulb. You go through, and I don't have the number in front of me, but this may be a number you'd want to go out there and calculate. How many bureaucracies do we have in the state of Florida alone for transportation? Well, you know you've got an arm of the federal government. You got MPOs, Metropolitan Planning Associations or organizations, a federal program, federal government taking over the state again. And Florida, I believe, has 24 or 26 of those. We have one here in Orlando called Metro Orlando. I've been to many of those meetings, too, a bunch of nothing but insider trading. It's just disgusting. It's corruption to the max. Then we have the Department of Florida Department of Transportation, and I'm not even sure how many district offices they have, but umpteen offices. And then, of course, you have the federal wing of this. And then, of course, you get into the expressway authorities. I believe there's 14 expressway authorities throughout the state of Florida, which, you know, they act like it's a user fee kind of thing. But it was the Hillsborough Expressway Authority that the taxpayers had to go bail out to the tune of $800,000 a few years ago. It probably ended up being more than that. They bailed them out because they were losing money. Plus, we had to go fix the roads that they didn't take care of. Just the whole reason you're paying a fee, fee/tax, is for them to maintain the roads. Here in Orange County, I don't know if you recall when they built the fake suspension bridge, the gateway to the city. How stupid is that? This is what these morons do for transportation. And then when people complain about gridlock, what are they going to do about it? They keep promoting it. So that's on the highway situation. They want to narrow down Colonial Drive. You wouldn't have problems on Colonial Drive if they take the tolls off the East-West Expressway. But they don't want to do what's best for transportation. It's so obvious of what they do. And then we'll talk about mass transit. So I've been rambling about transportation. Anything else you want to get in there before I talk about mass transit?
I mean, mass transit, you see, they're dealing with the problem of expansion. They want to expand and spend more money and just raise fees and just more tolls. And that's not how it should be. Why don't we deal with the, why don't we address some issues like, you know, billions of spend every year by cars just sitting in traffic because smog builds up due to them sitting idle for hours. So why don't you create, you know, open up lanes on on the ramps, on the on and off ramps, and you extend it and open it so that you can accommodate for rush hour. You understand? Instead of making the road longer, why don't you work on the one you currently have to make it more efficient? And I'll tell you why. It's because there is profit there is profit for certain individuals to just expand and continue raising fees and spending money without any accountability or any regard for the public.
And then the fact that they want to sell these expressways to private corporations. Right now, they're still technically state agencies, but they keep wanting to, little by little, they're inching towards the public-private partnership routine, as they like to call them. But truthfully, they're selling it out, and it's usually a foreign entity that buys up infrastructure. Public infrastructure should never be owned by any foreign entity. I think it's totally outrageous. Have you seen any bills on that recently, or would you take some action to stop that from happening?
I would definitely take some action to stop that from happening, but I haven't seen any bills introduced recently, no.
Now, a couple times they've pushed it, and it got people kind of pushed back on it. But the sad part is, unless you're really there reading what they're doing every day, they backdoor so many things, and we get stabbed in the back, and you know we don't know what hit us while they're doing all their sleazy stuff in the back room. And this is, again, the political parties condone all that. They allow it. They condone it. When they keep promoting the same people who do this kind of stuff over and over again. So political parties, I take the George Washington approach, no party affiliate, and George Washington had it totally right with everything to do with political parties. They divide us as a country. And neither of them stand for anything. I mean, I know you're Republican, and I'll try to be nice. But they just don't stand for anything. They don't, if they get back to what Republican values were, but it's going back.
It wasn't about.
Yeah.
It wasn't about being part of a sports team. It was more about the public good, as opposed to just trying to get your way every single time.
Exactly, like this craziness of what Harry Reid did with the filibuster and stuff like that. It's the hypocrisy of it all. It's just these people stand for nothing, and that's why we've got to flush, my own expression, flush all the sewage out of public office at every level. I do not believe in career politicians, but that's what we have come to. I definitely do believe in term limits. Not sure how your thoughts are on that, too. But we need to get rid of these career politicians. And in the case of your opponent, Linda Stewart, she's been on the commission for I don't know how long. I think she was in some other office at some point. Now she's in the House. We don't need career politicians. They become entangled, and they no longer serve the good of the people. They serve themselves. It's self-service instead of public service. So we've got to change that whole. And with me, I re-elect no one. and that's my motto in general. And it's like, yeah, in the overall scheme of things, there's one or two I would re-elect that I happen to really do believe are sincere and stand up to the Constitution. I've been a Ron Paul fan for years. I never voted for him because he was Texas, but there are some people that I would vote, very, very, very few, but I would risk not reelecting anybody if that would mean we would scrap and get rid of all the dead wood that's out there in public office today. Way too much. Well, I started to talk a little bit about, two things here. This vehicle miles travel tax. Now, this is the new tax they're trying to spread across the countryside. On top of the toll taxes, which was supposed to be this user fee based on how far you were driving, but now they want to put a gadget on your car to track your travel. And, of course, everybody says, well, no, this is just when you fill up, it's going to know how many miles. We're already doing that. You already pay a gas tax. A gas tax is a user fee. If you drive a gas guzzler, you're going to pay more. If you drive something that's more fuel efficient, then you're going to pay less. However, right now, the mentality, stupid mentality in my opinion, is when it comes to the electric cars, is that they get a free wave on the gas tax. Well, you know what? If you're going to drive an electric car, which they don't, they're not energy free. You just get it from a different source. Instead of a pump, you get it from the electrical outlet routine and get it from a coal plant or something else. It's not that there's no, it doesn't generate power pollution. It sure does. If you're going to drive an electric car, then you need to pay another fee, a highway mileage fee at that registration point because you don't pay at that gas pump. It should not, you know, it's one thing to the difference of driving a large car that is a gas guzzler that doesn't serve any true purpose, if you will, except to be a big car, versus somebody who uses something a little bit more economical, who gets them further and saves them money and saves gas, you know, that should be the trade-off for tax break, if you will, for doing that. But that's not the case with an electric car. It's not like electric cars don't use fuel or don't use electricity or energy. They do. So they should pay a different tax. What kind of tax would you propose for the electric cars, and also this vehicle miles tax? We've got to get that out there. People need to understand what they're trying to push again, another tax, which is literally a device to track your car, which, of course, once again, the NSA mentality, oh, they're not tracking where you're going. No, we don't need tracking devices on our cars. I want a law for banning those vehicle miles traveled devices. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, exactly. The VMT tax, the vehicles per the vehicle miles traveled tax, it just doesn't make sense to me. It would be so hard to implement it because the legislature would need to mandate that every single Florida registered vehicle be given an adequate lead time to be equipped with a commonly configured GPS device, and this device will measure how many miles you drive, and then you'll get a bill at the end of the month, kind of like a utilities bill. Then the state would have to create an agency to check that every single month. It's ridiculous. If you're taxing gasoline before you put it in the car, something more feasible would be, you know, to tax the electricity before you put it in the car, instead of completely invading the citizens' the privacy by going in their car and checking it every month and knowing where they are all the time. I'm completely against it.
To mention here in Florida, where the people who drive, you know, if this isn't done across the board nationwide, then those who drive back and forth into Florida from other states wouldn't be paying it either. So the Floridians would be paying the bigger piece of it, which brings me to the real reason we have transportation problems. And I get candidates that seem to kind of support my idea, but when it comes time, when they get to Tallahassee, they either lose their will or get persuaded or influenced by other whatever. I don't want to call it bribery, but somehow they lose their will to do this. The resort tax, the Florida State Tourist Tax, Resort Tax, whatever the fancy crazy name is, but the resort tax. When I talk to people about we ought to be able to use 5 or 10% of the resort tax for roads, they say, well, no, we have to use that on sports stadiums and schools. No, we don't. We do not. What is the mentality of people, especially those who run for public office who want to keep the status quo, but also the voter? We don't have to keep bad policy. We don't have to keep Obamacare. We don't have to keep bad policy. All that has to be done in the tourist tax is to say we're going to take and designate 5% or 10% of the tourist revenues to transportation, to fixing the highways. And it makes such sense, which is why I'm sure Tallahassee doesn't want to do it, because it makes too much sense. Tourism is very, very much connected to transportation. How can you not connect tourism to transportation? So why shouldn't a tourist tax do something to improve transportation, to improve the experience for those who come to Florida and make it easier for them to spend money on other things? It only makes sense, but, of course, that's why Tallahassee doesn't believe in doing it, because it makes sense. But they will ramble on and on. We have to use a tourist tax for a sports stadium. That is stupid, downright stupid. And these are people who don't care about the state or care about these residents. Would you be willing to go up there and challenge the tourist tax?
Yeah, I would. I definitely think we should invest more in our roads and our people and our education instead of large capital projects that benefit only a select few. I am, however, I should let you know, I am against what Linda Stewart has been proposing, which is a surcharge on the on cars that are rented by tourists, because to me that you're taxing people who are coming from out of state and they're renting a car here. They can't vote for you. You're taxing people who can't vote for you on it's taxation without representation. So, but I think you're talking about the resort tax in terms of overall revenues, which we tax the tourism industry already, correct?
Correct. Take the existing. I'm not suggesting increasing it. I'm saying take the existing because transportation does impact tourism. But you're absolutely right. They've tried this in the past. They go out there, and, again, it's because the political mentality of the Linda Stewarts out there and the other rhinos. She's a Democrat, but the other rhinos like Teresa Jacobs and these others, they're also, well, we'll charge the tourists and then nobody will get mad at us over here. You know, the Floridians won't care because we're going to tax the tourists. Well, it's not right to tax the tourists either. If you have a fair tax and you use it appropriately, the gas tax and things like that, the more people drive, the more revenues you get for the roads, you put it back in there. That would be the decent and the best way to do it. But they think they could, they try to play all these games and push the tourists. And, I mean, I have tourists tell me all the time, it's so expensive to drive in Florida. Transportation in Florida is outrageous because of these games they're playing. So I am in agreement with you. We should not be penalizing the tourist. I mean, the stupidest thing is to slap a hand that feeds you. And truthfully, I always thought the tourist tax was a scam, too. And it's something that's across the different states. I don't think I've been in any state where they didn't charge you some kind of a tourist tax. It's just a scam. It's just an added tax because you were stupid enough to go to their state. it makes no sense. But with the fact that we do have a tourist tax, let's use it for tourism expenses. Transportation.
Yep, completely agree.
And one last thing on the transportation, we haven't really got into the nitty-gritty of mass transit and rail transit. And, of course, everybody knows rail transit, scam rail, as I call it, was funded by the same rhino master in Washington, D.C., called John Mica. He was the one who was the genius of TSA, and how do we all like that? And then him and his scam rail. Now, tell me how a person can be a conservative. How can anybody claim to be a fiscal conservative and go and say, well, we need to have a train, a rail transit, a commuter train from Daytona to Kissimmee because somebody in Daytona may want to work in Kissimmee, and we need to help them. Why would anybody how can they be a conservative and come up with stupidity like that? And, of course, what's the underlying reason for them pushing this? What is Micah's real point of scam rail and these other other rail transit systems? What is your thoughts on his position and rail transit in general?
I feel like a lot of these ideas and legislation that are introduced with the public, in theory, it's good, in theory, because they're saying, you know, we have a growing elderly population that wants to get from one city to the next, and they might not be able to drive, and we avoid car accidents. However, it is when you look at the inner workings of these bills that you see that there's a lot of collusion with private companies, and somebody ends up profiting in the end. It's exactly what we've been talking about for the past, you know, 40 minutes. It's unethical behavior that it doesn't happen at the outset of it. It happens on the implementation of these programs and public transportation programs.
Well, a couple of things for people to know with John Mica. First off, the fact that the GOP continues to endorse him and the likes of even Mike Huckabee shows that the Republican Party is not fiscally conservative at all. They will support the rhinos. But John Mica, you can go out there and do your own research, or if I dig up my email on it, I can send you the link. His daughter's company at that time was Mica Communications or Mica Strategic Communications. Do you find it somewhat interesting that a lot of her clients happen to be in the transportation business? Isn't that kind of interesting? John Mica, the chair of transportation, House Transportation at that time, but a senior member to the Transportation Committee in D.C., and his daughter just happens to have a lot of clients in transportation. And somewhere in there, his daughter got a $13 million earmark for some kind of stupid project, too. Don't we find that really interesting? And how come the media doesn't tell us about those things? How come the Republican Party doesn't tell us about those things?
I feel like there should be definitely more transparency. We should definitely invest and demand it from our legislature that we want to know why. We want to know who's involved. We want to know of any conflict of interest. We want to know why we're paying something or why we're not paying something. I feel like the public should always have that report available to them on the web, on the internet, or at request. You can request it. Because in reality, it's not, and there's
go ahead.
No, there's no investigations that are being conducted, you know, as to what the underlying motives of a lot of these legislations are.
Yeah, and sad to say, we don't have a media that really does its job either. The media, in so many ways, the media today has just become a wing of, it's the PR department for government instead of being the watchdog of government. They go out there and they spew whatever the government wants them to say because they want access to whoever and all this other, what are the different games that the media does. So that's another reason why we have serious problems in our country. But the other thing with Micah, his district, because they gerrymander all these districts, which is wrong too, his district, which is here in Orange County, also goes up to Jacksonville, or did. I don't know if they changed it from this last time. CSX is in Jacksonville. CSX happens to be one of his big supporters. And I predicted it several years ago, but we'll see what happens. I've always predicted, starting about, I don't know, probably 5 years ago now, John Micah will at some point in time be a lobbyist for CSX. So he's out there lining their wallets, getting them ready. He wants to, you know, he does everything to support CSX. He doesn't care about the people. He doesn't care about fiscal accountability. And Fox News, being the good buds of the GOP, they go out there and they give him all sorts of coverage when he was fighting some wasted money in D.C. on buildings or something, but they never challenged him on what he did with TSA. They never challenged the fact his daughter got $13 million in earmarks, never challenged his waste of billions of dollars on scam rail. They never challenged him on all the other stuff. It's so despicable that that's what the media is, but it's also despicable that's what the Republican Party supports. They will promote him again, just like they're trying to promote Rick Scott out there. And it's like the Republican Party is killing itself. They really are. They stand for nothing anymore. And people say, well, how come you're only picking on the Republican Party? Well, the Republican Party, in theory, was supposed to be the one of smaller government, but they're not. They're not. So hypocrisy, but I personally don't like either one of them. Don't think either party has done their job on what they were supposed to do with protecting the working class. The Democrats don't protect the working class at all, not in any way. But, okay, anyway, and then, you know, again, the nonsense. This commuter rail thing will be the biggest, will just be another boondoggle, because here in Central Florida, which, as you well know, the mass transit, the bus system is stinks. They're going to use existing CSX tracks because we're giving money to CSX, which, again, this is what John Micah was going for. So we're giving money to CSX. We're liable. Here's the other part. The taxpayers of Florida are liable for any accident that happens on CSX tracks. Even if it's a CSX freight train that has an accident, you and me, the taxpayers, are liable. That isn't right. How does this garbage get through? What kind of morons in Tallahassee allow us to be liable for CSX? Because this is what John Micah wanted. He's out there. He's making sure he takes care of his buds at CSX, screwing over and stabbing the people in the back. And this is what's happening right now with CSX. The whole thing is so despicable. We're going to lose money. And the fact that, and I mean, way back when we fought, through Mobility 2020, we shut down Scam Rail once. But then John Micah played some more of his games with Rick Scott, and they eventually did this. But right now, and I challenged anybody who promoted rail transit to go door-to-door from your house to wherever it is you want to go on that train. And it will take you 2 to 3 times longer and will cost you more to go on the train. So why would you do that? You don't have a bus to get you there. And when it comes to the senior citizens, and you were mentioning the senior citizens, do you really think senior citizens are going to be safe on a train platform, or do you think they're going to get mugged? Do you think that the train will, accidents that will just happen with them getting on and off the train, depending on their condition, wheelchairs, whatever else? If you care about the senior citizens, you would help give them some other shuttle buses and things like that. There's better ways to do mass transit if we had people who actually cared about transportation. But these people in Florida and Florida government, they have never cared about transportation. There are so many ways we could improve transportation here in Florida for not a whole lot of money if you had a will. So I'm glad to hear that you want to do something about transportation, and I'll give you one last rant of whatever you want to say on the transportation thing, and then we'll hit the next subject of education.
No, I completely agree, and the people need to be the underlying, person, the underlying benefiter of whatever program we implement, and that's I'll end that discussion with that.
True. And anybody, you talk to anybody over has used links busing as it is. It just it's crazy. And, you know, Charlie Klein is not on the show right now. He and I came up with a it was really more his plan. I just helped him kind of put some of it together and tweak it. The bus hub system. Forget rail, because rail's on a fixed track. The money it would cost to expand rail and build new rail lines, billions and billions of dollars, when you could have a network similar to what the airlines do, a network of hub stations at different key points around Orlando and Orange County, and you have those as key transfer points, and people can navigate through the system that way, and instead of driving 10 miles the wrong direction to then drive another 10 miles the other direction and go in circles. So we have many solutions for transportation if we have the will to fix it. Right now it's all just a money game to them. Education. I know you had some things out there on education. Go ahead and tell us what you're thinking, and then we'll talk a little bit about Common Core.
Well, I mean, I can start talking about Common Core right now if you want.
Oh, go right ahead. Please do.
Well, the 10th Amendment to the Constitution provides that the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or reserved to the states. And education is one of these powers. It's a state issue. You can't expect, you know, someone in Florida to know exactly everything as, you know, someone in California or in Washington State or in South Dakota. You can't expect a uniform system. So that's why it should be local. You also have politicians who, let's say, have a two-year term limit. And after one year, they're already worrying about re-elections. So they're going to start fundraising, they're going to start doing favors, and they're going to start passing legislation that's just because they want to be seen doing something, correct? So that way, you have Common Core at the federal level that then needs to be implemented by at the state level that then needs to be implemented by the superintendent that then needs to be implemented by all the districts. That way, the policies for education are going to be changed. That's just the way politics works. They're going to be changed every 2 years, and the lag time is going to be just crazy because you're going to have to implement it at every level, and you're going to have teachers having a new curriculum and new textbooks, and it's a hassle. And something needs to be done about it. So, also there are a lot of you know, big names backing Common Core, but I am against it because I don't want the federal government withholding funds, telling the state what to do. Florida took Common Core, right? And let's say they called it Florida Core, and we could do whatever we want with it. We can make it better. We can add the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics program, the STEM program. We can add it to that, and we could just make it better. Instead of having a bare minimum, we can make it more stricter. We can have higher standards, but it's all controlled in Florida. It wouldn't be the federal government telling us what to do because we're not a bundle of sticks. You can't treat all the states like, here you go, this is yours, because not only is that bad policy, it's also unconstitutional.
And I'm glad you're mentioning that, because people keep forgetting about states' rights and state sovereignty. Major, major thing. And there's other pieces to Common Core, but we have one of our frequent listeners, Ms. Texas, her nickname, and she's out there in the chat room, is Damn Mad Granny Taft. She has a couple of comments. Hey, Ms. Texas, you're on.
Hi. Hi,
hello.
Guest. I just wanted to ask something. You were talking earlier about something I saw on Wahoo this morning. You were talking about why are they doing all this, and it makes no sense. I can't remember exactly what you were discussing, but it led into this. Is the candidate aware of, I saw this morning a picture of Bowling Green, Kentucky. I don't know if you're familiar with what the government is now saying they have just discovered has happened, that you have Muslim extremists who have been allowed into this country. If you were elected and realized and knew this was going in and on as a candidate to be elected, what type of steps would you take to make your constituents aware of what is going on and how we need to be more alert and try and prevent this from happening in your state?
Well,
yes.
Thank you for asking that. The FBI has a list of people who are on watch, terrorists from abroad who are on this list. And I don't know if you've read any of the articles lately, but some of them are getting through, and it's because of a complete lack of security. Not security as in TSA tapping you down. I'm talking about they just hand them the passport and they just look at this name and they don't bother to match it up with whatever name is banned in the system. So I feel like we shouldn't be letting known terrorists into the United States.
All right. Now, what I saw this morning, and you were talking about all this stuff they're doing and why are they doing it and what is leading up to, this is what I saw this morning. I saw a flag of the United States, and I want to see what your opinion of this is, flying high in the city of Bowling Green. And underneath the U.S. flag on the same pole was the Chinese flag.
Now, do you think that should be illegal?
I thought it was illegal. My question is, why is the Chinese flag flying high on the same pole with the flag of the United States?
I believe embassies fly both flags as well.
Well, and this is not an embassy flag. This is a flag in the city of Bowling Green. To me, that represents that they are or have allowed China in some way to have control of their city.
It appears to be, and I kind of know where you're going here, why do we promote communism as glorify communism in any way, shape, or form, put it next to our flag of freedom? Now,
exactly.
I mean, again, if you're at the embassy, the American flag should be the highest, and then you have all the poles along with all the different countries represented. That's one thing. But when you're out there, and I mean, we fly the Canadian flag all over the place, and it should be flown on a pole next to the flag, to the American flag, at a lower, just like a state flag. You know, it should not be the top flag, and it should not be sharing the flag with the flag of the United States. But see, right now we're brainwashing people and to think that, well, communism's really a pretty good thing. We like China. We like communism. This is all part of this brainwashing. I mean, that's the way I take it. The same as when we go and trash the American flag to fly a Mexican flag. There's something sick when we keep trashing America, and that's why I keep saying, how much longer are we going to survive when we have no respect and we don't demand a loyalty to this country? If you don't like the United States of America, don't let the door hit you on the whatever when you leave. If you think China's so wonderful, go move to China. But here,
well,
China
is still communist China.
Right.
They're not going to deny it. No one else is going to deny it. China is a communist country. And
right.
Why, I can't comprehend that a Chinese flag is being flown high and proudly over one of our cities. It's mind-boggling. It scared me to death.
Well, and I know exactly. I understand where you're coming from, Eric. You want to, and we also have this freedom of speech thing, and we need to
We have the First Amendment that guarantees freedom of speech. Because when do you stop? Do you stop? If you were to ban something like that. I completely understand. Just like a lot of people are against what the KKK is doing, it is their right to express
There's a difference between freedom of speech and giving your country away. And I don't find that flying the flag of China over the United States is a matter of freedom of speech. I think it's a matter of concession to China.
But you said the United States flag was above the Chinese flag.
It doesn't matter if it's above, below, and on top of. In my day, when I was growing up, you did not put another flag. The Chinese people I have nothing against the Chinese people. It's the Chinese government. The Chinese government has nothing to offer this country. Why are we giving them a place of distinction in our country? And to me, that's what that flag means. It doesn't mean freedom of speech. It doesn't mean, oh, okay, well, they're telling me that, you know, they like China and they're going to support China. That's not what that is saying to me, knowing what's going on in our government today.
Okay, Eric, go ahead.
I'm saying that that wouldn't happen in Florida. So that's something that Kentucky needs to do something about that. In Florida, we had a similar issue with a foreign flag being flown over I-75, and I mean people rioted about that, and it was removed shortly after. So I don't think anything like that would ever happen in Florida.
Yeah. Well. And I guess we won't go on too much longer on that particular issue, but the main thing is if it did happen, and I mean to a certain degree, right here in Florida, how many times Americans get in trouble for flying an American flag in their yard, which I think is outrageous, freedom of speech. I don't care about freedom of speech there. And then also massive Puerto Rican flags. And I know Puerto Rico is a state and it's whatever, but at what point we do have to reunite as one people. And this comes into the immigration discussion that we will hopefully get into, and you're a legal immigrant. And when, you know, I was listening to a show the other day, I believe it was Sean Hannity when they had their panel, and I heard a lady in the audience, and she was talking about the Republicans now, how they have to go for the Latino vote. And now this is my own opinion, and I'm kind of curious. You don't have to answer if you don't want to. And I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but with me, when I heard this lady said, the Republicans have to go after the Latino vote, I personally found that very offensive because I think we're supposed to be Americans. We should not be worrying about the Mexican vote, the Italian vote, the Russian vote. We should be Americans. I get totally, totally offended when I hear they should go for the Latino vote. If you don't want to be an American, don't. If you'd rather be a Latino, go back to South America or wherever you're Latino heritage is, if that's what you want to be. But if you're going to be here, be an American. We don't seem to care about being Americans anymore, which I think ties into the Chinese flag routine. By the way, I don't see anybody going out of their way to put Chinese in the Chinese language, Mandarin Chinese or Vietnamese language or anything else for other cultures. Florida is supposed to have English as the state language. We should not be putting every sign and every brochure out there in two languages. I don't know how you feel about that, but we should be teaching English. You want to be an American, we want to be united, we need to speak English, we need to be Americans, stop dividing ourselves all across this country. What are your thoughts on that?
I think we should be teaching English. That's our national, you know, that's our official language. And in terms of going after the Latino vote, I read an article recently, and it talks about how the Democrat Party has brainwashed the Hispanics into voting for them because all the media outlets are all dominated by the Democrat Party. So when they say we should go after the Latino vote, it's to remind the Hispanics and Latin, everybody that is Latino in the United States, that we, as the Republican Party, have not forgotten about them because that is what they're being brainwashed to think, and that's completely wrong. When Bush was campaigning, he would go to Hispanic neighborhoods and he would show them a column with Hispanic principles and with Republican principles, and they each paralleled each other. Also, Reagan loved Hispanics. He said Hispanics are just Republicans, but they don't know it yet. So I feel like there's the country's been misled and it's been divided. So that's what they think. We need to not go after the Latino vote as in changing our views completely, but show Latinos that that the Republican Party is aligned to a lot of their beliefs, because a lot of Hispanics that I know are just misinformed.
Well, and that's very true in general about the black community as well, because it was not a Democrat president who oversaw the Civil War and freed the slaves, basically. And it truly, in the overall scheme of things, it has been the Republican Party who has been promoting the freedom and the will of the individual and empowering the individual, empowering the middle class. It's totally been misconstrued through history writing, if you will, and, of course, media, and it truly is. But I'll get back to the other issue, and then we'll get back to the education thing here. I personally don't – I mean, I would be – you think we're a melting pot. To be an American means you pretty much came from someplace else. That's the true – the only Native Americans are the Indians who were here to begin with, kind of thing. But when it comes to the rest of us, our heritage started someplace else. That's all fine and dandy. But, I mean, to me, when we divide, when we identify any group individually, that is when we divide ourselves. Instead of being united as one people, we're saying we're divided. We will not survive divided. And that is what I get so frustrated with, the La Raza group, these others who think that they should have the Southwest back again. And this whole thing about this Latino mentality, instead of, like, can you truly imagine saying, well, we really have to go emphasize pasta so we can get the Italian vote. I mean, we have to go emphasize this to get the Russian vote. You know, it's just the Asian vote, whatever. You don't hear that. We got to get away from the Latino vote, period. Go for the American vote. If you're an American, here's what the Republicans are supposed to believe. Go out there and truly believe, as an American, this is what your right is, and this is what we as the Republican Party or whatever – here is what we promote, because you're an American. Get away from all this crap with dividing us. Dividing us is going to kill us. Anyway,
yeah.
You can add anything to that if you want to, or we can get back to the education.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we should pander to anybody to get our votes. We should stick to our values, and people will vote for us based on our values without changing them.
Exactly. Okay, we were talking about education and the Common Core, and the other piece of this, which you mentioned there's some high-profile Republicans, is unbelievable. I don't, you know, I wish I had a copy of the Common Core legislation in front of me, because some of the stuff that it is doing is so anti-American, and it truly is communist. And, of course, you know, John Ellis Bush, he is a big leader of this, and... how familiar are you with the history of the Bush family and their association with communism? How familiar are you with that?
I'm aware that the Bushes have been very involved in international politics for a really, really long time. They were they're actually tied to the Federal Reserve. They're tied to even the Bin Laden family.
Wow. That and, of course, it all started with Prescott Bush. What I know of the history, Prescott Bush, when he aided Hitler. And then it was George Bush Jr., George W., who had the Security Prosperity Partnership of North America. That made us the North American Union. That never quite happened, but he signed it in 2005. And then it was George Bush Sr., George H.W., who signed us up for Agenda 21 through the Rio Summit, Rio Doctrine in 1992. And then you got John Ellis Bush here in Florida, who's out there promoting amnesty because we need more Mexican workers, and they're more fertile. And then he's also pushing Common Core. There is such a culture of communism in this organization, or this family, I should say, and I don't think most people realize that. But he's out there heavily promoting Common Core. The Republican Party is still actually considering him for the presidency. I find it totally disgusting, and I don't think enough people truly understand who the Bush family really is, what they have been over the years. They're not the squeaky clean Southerners and, you know, that Southern twang that George Bush had and all this other stuff of what they really want, which goes back to Common Core. Common Core, it's communism. It is. It's despicable. But you are definitely because what's going on right now in Florida? What would you do to stop Common Core? What would your – or what are you thinking of doing?
Well, Now, like I was saying, one thing you could do is just not accept it at the federal level. It would be to have Florida implement its own program. And what we could do is just agree to take that exam that will compare the test. So you can compare scores from here to Georgia, but it's not the federal government saying this is what everybody has to learn, because that has been proven time and time again not to work. You can't macromanage everybody.
Well, and I totally agree with that, but the question, and again, it's going to be once you're sitting in that chair in Tallahassee, which, you know, I'm wishing you all the best on that, when you're sitting in that chair and you've got those people all around you saying, but wait a minute, we want free money. There's no such thing as free money. That's amazing how the state mentality, we're going to put the white flag up, we're going to surrender our rights as a state because we want federal money. This is what has gone, this has gone on across the board in so many areas. How do you stop it?
Well, you either it's kind of like you know, a social program. You have people who make, you know, $1,000 below the poverty line. They get all these thousands of dollars in social programs. They don't want to get a raise because they will lose all these social programs. So we're here and we're getting, as a state, we're getting this funding for education. But we have to do what they want, and it's a means for control. And Jimmy Carter started it, and it's been that culture in Washington ever since. So we either end our dependency on that funding. We have to somehow end our dependency on the federal funding for education. Maybe you know, we've talked several times tonight about investing more in education. Maybe we might be able to complement that, and then we can implement whatever education policy we want. But as of right now, we're very dependent. We're very dependent. So it's kind of like you have a gun in your head, and this is what you have to do, so do it.
Well, and that brings up another interesting point. And I, you know, I'm not trying, hopefully you don't mind these kind of questions, because I just think these are symbolic of what's going on here. But, you know, at that same point, and I believe this at the local, state, and federal level, it's time for the true tough love. I mean, it's time for Americans to wake up. You know, stop getting the handouts. Nothing's free in this world. Those of us who have the ability to work and to contribute to the society should. We should take care of those who truly can't. And I'd have no problem with that whatsoever. But there's a point here when, if we want to stop the bleeding, we're going to have to suffer some. There's going to be some pain when we get the stitches and we go through the rehab and the ICU and whatever else you want to call it. There's going to be some withdrawal symptoms, if you want to put it that way too, to get things back on where they're supposed to be. And that's what people of Florida have to be willing to accept in order for us to maintain state sovereignty, because I don't think Rick Scott could care less about state sovereignty. I'm not sure how many of those in Tallahassee do care about it. The 10th Amendment doesn't seem to mean a whole lot to them. But we're going to have to face the fact that it's going to be painful to get back to where we're supposed to be. We've lived on this fraudulent, phony gravy train for so long that money falls from the sky. Well, the money is not falling from the sky anymore. We have to take care of our own. It is truly no different than when a family or an individual has overextended on their credit cards, and we say, you know, we're going to have to go to a debt consolidation thing. We're going to have to cut this. We're going to have to get rid of these credit cards. We're going to have to focus on this, and we're not going to be able to go out there and go on a world tour or vacation until we get our bills caught up and we save the money. People, and I truly believe, and it's up to you as to take this as any kind of advice on the campaign trail, I truly believe Americans are looking for someone to say tough love. We're going to have to suffer to save this country. We've allowed the out-of-control bureaucracy, the out-of-control tyrannical wannabe dictators, whatever you want to call these people that are in office today, who have gone out there on the spending spree, selling us out every which way, selling us out to the United Nations, selling us out to China, selling us out all over the board. But you know what? If we want to save this country by starting with the state of Florida, we have to save the state of Florida first, then it's going to take some tough love. We're going to all have to sacrifice, and we're going to do without some of the bells and whistles that we don't need government to do. We got to get back to what the core of what government should do, and it's going to cost, you know, cost on either you're going to pay more money or you're going to lose some of these benefits, but we have got to cut the umbilical cord of the federal government. No association
exactly.
with that Department of Education.
Exactly.
Okay, what was next on the list here? And I feel like I'm ranting too much. I don't mean to be at times. I feel like I'm not trying to be your campaign manager here.
No. We were going to talk about Obamacare.
Oh yes, let's go with Obamacare. Healthcare in Florida versus Obamacare. What's the solution? What do we do?
Well, again, 10th Amendment. That is a state issue. So besides repealing it, it's a terribly implemented program. And we at this point, it's very hard to repeal it. But that would be part of the solution, repealing it. We have to provide the average American a way to be exempt. Right now, if you want to be exempt from Obamacare, you either have to be a really big corporation, a member of Congress, a Mennonite, or in jail. What we need to do is provide the average person a way to be exempt. You know, that really should be our main goal. Instead of Obamacare, we could have faced healthcare as a state by incentivizing nonprofit hospitals. You know, these are created when underserved cities or neighborhoods get what's called the certificate of need, saying that there's no hospital in the area or that the population can't afford it. This certificate enables the creation of a nonprofit hospital, which will be affordable to everyone. It will create competition. It's free market economics, and it will drive down the cost of healthcare for those people in that area or in that general region. But since we don't have that, we need demand that the average person be exempt from Obamacare instead of paying that fee.
That would make sense. And then what about Medicaid?
Yeah. Well, you know, now you're faced with this issue that a lot of people don't qualify for Obamacare, but they don't qualify for the regular Medicaid because of Obamacare, and they're losing their own health insurance. So you have this big gap of people who are not represented, and it's typically people in the middle class, and that shouldn't be happening.
Can I interrupt here?
Sure, yep. Go ahead.
When you're talking about Obamacare, I don't understand why it's so hard to repeal it. I know there's a lot been put in effect and so forth, but my other question is, how aware of you of the items that are included in Obamacare that have nothing to do with medical health?
Exactly. Yeah, it's
there's so much in there.
Bad
that,
law. Yeah, exactly.
That it's not has nothing to do with health care. It's about taking more of our rights away from us. And for instance, today yesterday, hidden in Obamacare, I found out is a bill that says Obama is fixing to give away, and it's included. Free gas, you know,
yeah.
Like free phones.
Let me tell you about some provisions in Obamacare that most people have not heard about. There's an increase in taxes on families earning over $250,000. It adds a new tax on your investment income. It puts a limitation on those with HSAs and FSAs. You know, flexible savings accounts and health savings accounts. It adds a new tax on those who purchase medical services. It penalizes marriage. It creates a new taxpayer-funded subsidies for the low and middle classes to purchase health coverage. You can use Obamacare for abortions. You can use it you're paying. Our money is going to fund abortion. It puts Medicare decisions in the hands of an unelected board. It puts a premium tax on health insurers. It creates an unsustainable entitlement program, and it needs to be repealed. Also, you know, you have all these businesses that are putting their workers part-time because of this. It's hurting our economy.
Well, there is also provisions in there. I haven't seen it. I understand in some states it's being done already. But when you go to your doctor's office, there is a questionnaire that asks questions and digs into information that is no way, according to our Constitution, legal for them to be asking. And people don't realize this. In other words, it's another way to take our rights away with it. Part of it has to do with gun control. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am.
And in other words, when you're out campaigning, are with these big things that you would feel safe in bringing up and letting your constituents know that you're on what's going on?
I would absolutely bring this up. There's no way around it. These are the issues that are being faced by my community, my state, and my country right now. And I bring those up.
And the other point, too, Ms. Texas, Eric is running for the state house, and so he has to take a slightly different approach than obviously what he would if he was up in Congress. So,
well, that's true, but it's also, to me, it's one goes with the other now. There's no way a state representative or a state legislator can get around not letting his constituents know that he's aware of what's going on, because the states are complicit in helping to get this through as well.
Well, exactly, and that's why I'm talking about, just like with Medicaid and just like with Common Core, you know, we've got to get back to state sovereignty. And that's why I like the idea of what Eric was saying. We got to, from the state side, we got to give these Floridians ways to be exempt from Obamacare. Let's do what we can as a state to do more to block it. But, of course, obviously the true answer is to repeal the whole mess. And, you know, little by little it is coming crashing down, but I fear for the especially with the crazy games that Senate's playing these days, what they may try to do. But at the same time, I mean, you know, as a state, if we get out of Medicaid, which is a federal program as well, and what does the state of Florida do to assume the responsibility to cover? What should it cover for health care for those who are in need and those who can't afford it? For the children who have no control over it, what do you do at the state level to revamp or to reform education back at the state level versus the federal level?
Did you say reform education?
Well, no. You know, we already talked about the education. The thing is to cut the umbilical cord with D.C. for the education. But the same is
exactly
true with health care. Same is true with health care. What do we do to make the state... What do you do about Medicaid? Because it's obviously a federal program, too.
I mean, as of right now, with the mess that Obamacare has been causing, you have a lot of people who were against Obamacare who are now, they're stuck. So this is you can let me know what you think about this. This is my personal view. You have these people who are stuck. They can't afford medical programs. They can't afford their own insurance now because it just spiked like 3-4 times what they normally would pay. I think these people the middle class needs to be protected. So maybe an expansion of Medicaid would be a temporary problem for this, despite the fact that and it would also help, I think, with the fact that the people who are at the bottom in these social programs don't want to get out of poverty. They don't want to get out of poverty because they receive these programs. So an expansion would, you know, if you, let's say, you get into the next tax bracket, you'll make significantly less in government, you know, you'll get significantly less programs, but you also are incentivized to make more money, to kind of get out of poverty. Get out of having full Medicaid and then just having like a partial Medicaid, something that incentivizes you to move forward. Also, this will help in protecting the middle class, who is now kind of stuck because of what Obama did.
Right.
But we do need to work on cutting the umbilical cord. That is what we need to do. We need to become, as a state, we need to address these issues. Therefore, if we address these issues as a state, we can go to Tallahassee, we can go to Washington and say, you know what, we've got it taken care of. You can keep your policies to yourself.
That's a good way of putting it. I like that. Now, the next topic is the budget and fiscal accountability. We've covered some of that, and then there's also the saltwater. I've got intrusion here, but I don't think that's what
intrusion.
It's supposed to be. I think so we can go on to talk about the budget and fiscal accountability if you want to. I think we've kind of touched on that, or go to the saltwater thing, whichever you prefer.
We can talk about both. It should be a primary concern for federally and within the state. I've always been and still am in favor of auditing the Fed. So many people in Congress are for it, but nobody's doing anything about it. It's a quasi-private institution that maintains a constant flow of money being printed that the United States borrows at interest, which causes inflation and is sinking us deeper into debt. Maybe it's time for individuals, the state, to take back America. You know how we issued treasury bonds to China, so China owns our debt? Maybe the states should borrow. There's nothing in the provisions that says that the states can't borrow treasury bonds, or more than we do actually to some extent. Well, maybe the states should purchase more treasury bonds. The states would own America's debt. That way China doesn't own our debt. Americans are taking back America by owning our debt.
And
the states
were
able to do
that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the federal government would be accountable to us, as opposed to China, who wants to take over by just buying land over here and buying our debt and buying everything. They think that it's an investment.
And that's where, it's one of the awkward things. First off, I think there's something very sad, borderline of treason, when you sell out your country to another country. At the same time, we talk a lot about the global economy. Well, I don't really care about the global economy. I want to take care of our homeland first. It's fine if Marriott Corporation wants to have some kind of international and then they have hotels all over the world, whatever. There's things like that that are fine within certain boundaries, but there's something sick when you've got China or whatever coming over and buying up our monuments and taking ownership of our national parks and things.
Mm-hmm.
There's something seriously wrong here, and we got to stop that. And there's something at the state level to control our own destiny.
Exactly.
Okay, the other, getting back to the saltwater, what was that all about? What are you looking at on that one?
Well, you have the saltwater, the aquifers in Florida, and companies from like California, New York, they can just tap into it, and they're taking our water, and it's depleting. It's a finite amount, so they're tapping into it, and what's happening is saltwater is seeping into our drinking water. It's called saltwater intrusion, and it's an issue that, we're not really addressing, despite the fact that it's our drinking water, and we're just spending it like it's nothing. For example, do you know that when you go get a car wash, that's drinking water that's being used on your car, and the drinking water is running out? Something needs to be done about it. One, we need to stop people from tapping into it, especially, outside corporations from out of the state that don't have to pay anything for it. They just tap into it. And secondly, we need to do something to clean up the water. And there are several companies that I've done research on. One of them is CH2M Hill that has developed technology to clean up the salt that is getting into the water, into the aquifers. But it needs to be addressed, and it's not being addressed fast enough. We don't want to wait till the last minute and hear someone and then wait to act when it's too late. We should start implementing programs now, perhaps having, two different water systems. You can have an irrigation water system and a drinking water system. And when you wash your car, it's irrigation water. And when you're cooking or drinking, it's drinking water.
Right. And actually, it's kind of interesting you're bringing up the water, and it kind of ties in with the next ICLEI thing. Because here in Florida, growth management, if you can, I call it the lack of any kind of growth management. Everything we do with planning and growth management, and how it all ties into ICLEI, Agenda 21, sustainable development, all these things, they're more negative than they are good when it comes to the economy. Here in Orange County, I can't tell you how many times, and I've been to some meetings, and I got pretty rowdy at a couple of them because I used to be on the Soil and Water Conservation District Board. They go out there and they talk about mitigating the wetlands. And we've only got one small wetland here in the city limits, technically in the city of Orlando now, because they keep saying they're mitigating the wetlands. They think that they can dig a ditch or some kind of retention pond, detention pond, and that mitigates the wetlands. They tear down the cypress trees, which are the natural purifiers of the water, and they act like they're doing all this stuff, and it's so wrong of what they're doing and how they manage our growth. It's totally out of control, and it's whatever the developers typically want because they're in bed with the developers and all this other kind of nonsense. But and they end up causing other areas to flood. Everything to do, and it's, again, because government gets into the wrong role of land use. I personally don't have the perfect answer in the overall scheme of things of land management. I know I don't like the way we do it now, and this goes into the property rights as well, as to what you're allowed to do. Because what has happened many times in different areas throughout Florida, and you don't have to go out there very far on the campaign trail before you'll hear the stories, if you haven't already, where, you know, there's these people who have lived on this ranch or in this area. They could have lived there for 20, 30 years and never had a problem. Then some developer wants to build something on this other land, which is a wetland. It's a swamp. The water is there. You can see it. The cypress trees are there. You can see it. But they want to build there, and so they're going to mitigate the wetlands, which, of course, impacts the water supply. And they BS their way through it, through the county commission and the city commission. They go and build what they're building, supposedly mitigating the wetlands. They act like they can pick up a swamp and relocate it. And then the next thing you know, these other properties in the general area start being flooded out by what they've done. This is total recklessness. I don't know what the solution is to growth management per se, but what we're doing here in Florida is not working.
And then you mentioned ICLEI, which is obviously the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. And you see, we are part of ICLEI, but we haven't adopted it. Because what happens at the federal level is that government starts operating as a negotiator than as a representative of the people. So you have something like, we can't pass the legislation approving ICLEI, so we're going to try, and we can't pass an amendment, so we're going to try an executive order. Or they're just trying to find a way around it. And then what ends up happening is you have an unconstitutional approval of a mandate or that association. That ICLEI is an international association, and it's criticized because it supports the United Nations, Agenda 21 program that you mentioned. And it tries to solve a lot of problems by narrowing people's choices of, like, housing and food and transportation and recreational activities. They're just kind of limiting people's choice. You don't have choice, and then that's not how it should be. That's not what America is all about. So even though we haven't officially adopted it because it's not a treaty and the president couldn't get into it, he has both presidents have accepted it and they have signed it.
Well, and like Orange County is a member of ICLEI, Florida is a member. Why are we at either the state or local level? Why are we a member of ICLEI? We don't have to be. Why don't we get out of it?
Well, there are powerful interests again at play here, and usually there's an author called Hans Morgenthau, and he wrote about international politics, and he says that behind every reason, there's always selfish intent. And they will try to justify it with moral reason. So they might say, they're trying to help the environment and they're trying to cut down on waste and they'll give you all these broad terms, and then they will create this organization and they will give them very broad powers, and that is really what I am against. creating organizations that we give broad powers to. Unchecked broad power leads to corruption. You talk about, you know, I know we're going to get to it eventually, but the Blue Way system, the national Blue Way system in the state, they have, their powers include foster strong relationships, which you tell me what that means, connect people with the outdoors, that's another one of their powers, promote healthy rivers and watersheds, learn and share knowledge, promote sustainable economic opportunities, and focus on the future. These are the responsibilities. So anything, any policy they want to pass that they can fit into one of these categories, they can implement. And that's what happens when you delegate too much power to one of these institutions. Because let's say we're gonna promote sustainable economic opportunities, so we're gonna make every school district in Florida adopt this textbook on economic sustainability. Or let's say we want to promote healthy rivers and watersheds, so you're gonna create a PPP, a public private partnership, and have a company come in and just take over all the the rivers and the watersheds in Florida. And that's what happens when you delegate broad, unchecked power. And I'm completely against it. And it's a trend that needs to be stopped. And I strongly believe you stop it by getting the common people, normal people, to run for office, not just career politicians. I need you to run for office. I need everybody, the normal person, not just someone who's in it to make a gain or to get connections or to make a living out of it. You need people who actually care about people.
Can I interrupt again?
Sure, go ahead.
ICLEI is the entity or the group that's being used to implement Agenda 21.
Yes.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And if you need to check with your city council or with your city planner, and if the Florida or the city or the county, your particular one, let's say, that you live in, if you are paying any type of fee to join, I think the last I heard it cost $60 to belong to ICLEI, then you are full-fledged a member of ICLEI. You are in adopting their regulations and their rules and their way of doing things.
Well, the one other thing I want to make a point, Eric, before you respond to that too. The other piece, what you're talking about, well, these different, it's like EPA and these other groups that are given so much power, I mean, truthfully, they replace the state legislature. I mean, why do you need a House of Representatives or a Senate when you've already given all these powers to these agents who go and truly override through, not executive order, but the same mentality? They go write their own laws. It's totally outrageous. And so you can go ahead and comment on both of those, follow up with what Ms. Texas was just saying.
Well, certainly the first thing here is that they are implementing the rules. The EPA is a member of ICLEI. EPA is
right.
Also enforcing ICLEI. They are behind it. They are going to force smart meters, everything else down your throats. And it's because they come in and they lie to you, the way they wave their money in your face and get you hooked.
Right. And Eric is against letting them do that. Go ahead, Eric.
Exactly. And people need to wake up and realize what's happening. If we actually look at the broad powers that are handed, any time there's a delegation, I'm not just talking about ICLEI, any time there's a delegation of power, there needs to be a limit. And there needs to be you can't just give broad powers to any organization. We should definitely limit the amount of the power that we delegate federally or at any level. And I understand we signed it locally, that wouldn't have been able to happen unless we didn't have a national mandate happening.
Yep, that umbilical cord again. And the same is true with Obamacare, the health care secretary, whatever. They gave her powers to do whatever she wanted to. So, again, these people, these entities, agencies, whatever you want to call them, bureaucracies throughout the federal government and the state government, they literally are taking the powers away from those we elect to do the job. It's like, we don't need you if they're going to dictate to us what we're going to do. I mean, there's definitely a conflict there, and there needs to be legislation that reins those in, dissolves the Department of Education at the federal level, and then at these local levels, EPA, this other garbage, Florida Forever, whatever, Florida Forever, whatever it is. And I want to, you know, I'm going to make sure you come back when I get Neil on here, because she can go into talk about the easements, how Florida has got this massive land grab going on all around the state, literally buying up the land and protecting easements, which ties into ICLEI, Sustainable Development, Agenda 21 stuff. She is really the expert on the Florida stuff that's going on. And maybe if we have time, we can touch back on that. But there was two other things I wanted to make. We already talked a little bit about promoting China investment in Florida, and maybe we'll touch on that again. But I sent another email to you that had a personal touch to me. The criminal notaries. Hopefully, and I mean, I do know Senator Darren Soto today. He's working on legislation, and I don't know if you had a chance to talk to him, or maybe you will, about and coming up with laws to protect what these Florida notaries do. There is no oversight of the Florida notary today. It is a license to commit fraud. It's a license for identity theft. It's a license for mortgage fraud. It's a license for property theft. Felons. We got people in jail that have active Florida notary commissions. I mean, it's totally nuts. And I don't know how much you've seen on any of that stuff.
If you're a notary public, you are a public officer by the Constitution, by law, to serve the public. So once you go to jail for a crime, you should definitely give up your position as a public officer. It's only logical. It makes sense.
And right now, the fact is, anybody can be, you know, you don't even have to be a citizen of this country to be a Florida notary.
No, I didn't know that.
Anybody can be a Florida notary. Yeah, anybody can. All you have to do is say, well, you're planning on moving to Florida, and you can be one. It's a silly online test. If I was a reporter, I'd try to set something up where I could have someone go in and show how easy it is for anybody to become a notary. And then, like I say, literally we have people who are behind bars now who still have active notaries. And then there's over 400,000 notaries in the state of Florida. They got one person in Tallahassee overseeing what these notaries are doing. And there's nothing. I mean, I had to fight with them to suspend the notary because of her fraudulent activity. I proved what she did was fraud. And even then, the letter that they sent her, and I have a copy of it, and if you want it, I'll forward it to you, what the state did, Rick Scott, he signed his executive order suspending this notary. And then in their letter, they said, in lieu of being suspended, you can resign. They gave this person opportunity to resign so that they could go and reapply and become a notary again. This is what the state of Florida is doing. And Florida is number one in identity theft and property theft and mortgage fraud. I wonder why. Any other? I think you pretty much covered it, but just kind of be aware of what's going on, especially when they passed a bill not too long ago to fast-track mortgage foreclosures. That's also a piece of this, too. Totally everything against the working class. It's the honest person. And I'm saying, try to be honest in this country. You're the victim. You are truly the victim if you're honest. The other thing was, we talked a little bit about illegal immigration in Florida. Now, Marco Rubio, he was the Speaker of the House for a while there. I don't know if you recall when he was there, if you were here at that time, whether you were Senator at that point. I lost track on the timelines. But Marco Rubio 11 times blocked legislation that would have strengthened Florida enforcement of immigration. I am a contender that we don't need immigration reform. We need immigration enforcement. We need to enforce the laws. We need to secure the borders. Then we deal with the people who are here. I don't want to hear all this amnesty nonsense. That is, amnesty is not the answer. We need to secure this homeland before we do anything else. And Marco Rubio, like I said, he blocked numerous things to strengthen state immigration laws. And when we talk a little bit about Homeland Security and stuff, what is the, you know, well, the state has the National Guard, the role of the federal government versus the state with immigration. There are state laws, there are state rules. We have certain rights to secure the state of Florida. What is your take on any of that piece and immigration in general?
Well, I'm against illegal immigration, and partly because I went through the process. I became a citizen in 2006. That was 7 years ago. And I'm proud to be an American. Illegal immigration has resulted in a slave labor system. You have powerful companies that benefit from cheap labor in America. You also have partisan efforts to keep illegal immigration coming because there's a giant wave of votes that will go to a single party when it happens, the Democrat Party. It's all political, and it does not take the average citizen into account. The loss of jobs that the companies, want to hire cheap labor illegally, the loss of jobs would be great. You mentioned Walmart before. That's just one of them. You have to take into consideration the small business owner who now has to compete with a non-tax-paying company, or the public schools who bought supplies expecting 80 students on the first day of school, but 180 of them show up, etc. This is what needs to be done about immigration, and it's very similar to what you proposed, and it's very similar to what Ronald Reagan proposed. For undocumented workers in America, before we provide a path to citizenship, we must secure the border and stop illegal immigrants from coming in. We provide sanctions to businesses who hire undocumented workers. Once we secure the border, then we can take care of those immigrants that are already here, whether it be a 12-year plan to citizenship or a conditional deportation where they can visit once every few months or a year, or a student visa. But that solution can only come after we secure the border.
That sounds good to me. And what is the role of the state in securing the border? Because we have this, the states have certain rights. It's not immigration is not strictly a federal thing, as sometimes it's led to believe. The role of the National Guard, the Florida part of that, the National Guard all has a state piece of it. What should we be doing to enforce immigration law, I guess is the way to put it.
We have a very limited power. States have the power to enforce federal immigration laws, and of course we can definitely pass our own mandates that do not exceed the bounds of the federal mandate. But as a state, it's very, very difficult. That's why things like that law in Arizona are being challenged. But in terms of do we need it? Yeah, yes, of course. It doesn't even have to be specifically dealing with immigration as a whole. It can be just dealing with businesses hiring illegal immigrants, providing sanctions. That would definitely be allowed, and it's something we should definitely implement.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Enforcement first. Clean up the mess we have, and then we deal with all the people that are here, whatever that solution is. But I don't even want to talk about that solution until we've secured the border and we secured this homeland. There's something totally nuts when we're out there securing all these other countries on the other side of the planet when we can't even take care of our own. It's disgusting to me. Now, we're getting down to, we've got about 8 minutes left here. We talked a little bit about promoting China investment in Florida, and I think we're both in agreement that we should be supporting America, investment in America, not China. But I wanted to give Miss Texas one last chance to get her last word in, or last question for you, and then I'll give you the last few minutes to give a little bit of a wrap-up, tell people about your website, the walk around Lake Yola kind of stuff. So, Miss Texas,
okay,
you got a quick question?
No, I just was listening in as I normally do, and afraid, I'm so afraid that some of these people running for office are not fully grasping what ICLEI is and the UN Agenda 21 is, in the fact that we really don't have to do what they tell us to do. It's not a mandate. They're not a government agency. These people who come in to run that program are not government agents, so they don't have any power unless we give them the power. And that's the only reason I piped in, because That's the main thing I'm concerned about, and was hoping, you know, just wanting to stick my nose in where it didn't belong, of course.
It always belongs. You know that. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And, well, I don't know if we'll be on the show tomorrow for the American Freedom Watch radio piece, but Thursday, I'm not planning on having a show Thursday for Thanksgiving, so I wish you a very happy and safe Thanksgiving, Ms. Texas.
Well, thank you, and the same back to you, and the same to your guests, and I know you're a supporter, and I hope he does well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Eric, it's your turn. You can give a last summary of your candidacy and then what you want people to do to help you out.
I don't support of China buying our property here in America or buying our debt. So I feel like we should bring businesses back to America instead of outsourcing. So we should provide some sort of incentive for them to bring back their money, because a lot of them they have a checking account outside, and they don't even bring it back to the United States because they feel that they're going to get taxed heavily. So if we incentivize businesses to do that, then we'll help our economy. Here's an example. Last year, a company called Emerson Electric had $2 billion in cash in the bank outside of the U.S. But this year, they had to borrow money in the U.S. to help buy back shares and distribute dividends and even pay its taxes. So the system is seriously flawed, and we need to bring back the businesses to America. My website is Eric with a K, Arroyo, A-R-R-O-Y-O, campaign.com. And my Facebook is facebook.com/Eric Arroyo campaign. Again, I'm in the campaign trail. I'm walking door to door and meeting a lot of voters. I'm getting a lot of feedback, and I hope to take that to Tallahassee and represent the people. I've talked to pretty much anybody, and my phone number is on my website, so feel free to call and ask any questions. I'll be happy to talk to anybody.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on tonight. This has been an excellent discussion. Hopefully, again, I wasn't trying to be your campaign manager there. A couple times I probably sounded like it. but I'm very concerned with what's happening in our country and in our state, and we really need people such as you to go out there and do the tough love. And people want the truth. We're sick of the lies. We're sick of being told what we want to hear versus what the truth is. And we really do need for people such as yourself to push the truth. We got to stop the bleeding. It's going to be rough. It's going to be painful. That's all there is to it. But we have to do it if we want to save this country. We want to save our state. It takes preserving state sovereignty to even begin to save the United States of America. So, and we will have you back on. I will definitely, you know, when Neil is available, because, again, she is such a wizard on Florida. Everything, the different bills they have out there and all the things they're doing with Florida, ICLEI, with the blueways, the greenways, the easements, et cetera, et cetera. She's just got so much knowledge, and she can definitely drill you on some of those things. And get that good stuff out there too. So we will definitely have you back, and we are down to 2 minutes left.
All right.
Thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
Thank
Tommy.
You. Thanks. And I wish everybody out there a very happy and safe Thanksgiving. Tune in tomorrow night. We will have our regular American Freedom Watch radio show that we have with Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. I don't plan on doing anything special on Wednesday, and I'm definitely taking Thanksgiving off to give thanks for what we do have in our country. To God bless the USA, please, dear Lord, protect us, and to give thanks for being an American. On that note, please be an American, participate, have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Good night, everyone.
Good night. You didn't ask permission. Bye.
Good night, Miss Texas. Happy Thanksgiving.